Blurry blue and yellow lights become clear. In yellow letters, focus features. Sketched circles become a twisting gyroscope. Working title. Focus Features presents. A Working Title Production. Lights come up on a stage. The safety curtain is painted to resemble the red and orange drapery of a stage curtain. In bold letters, Anna Karenina. The screen is slowly lifted. Much of the film which follows has been produced like a play, with the sets transforming around the actors as they move from scene to scene. A painted cityscape. In an ornate decoration on the backdrop, Imperial Russia 1874. The image fades. Now on stage, Prince Stepan Arkadyevich Oblonsky, aka Steva, reclines comfortably in a chair. The stage is laid out to resemble a spacious room in Steva's home. A barber makes a grand entrance, displaying a red cape, like a matador might a red rag. Twirling it in the air, he drapes it theatrically over the sleeping Steva, who almost seems dead, so little does he move. Steva wakes at the sound of the barber sharpening his cutthroat razor. His cheeks now covered in shaving foam, mustachioed Steva winces as with three Zorro-like flourishes, the barber administers the shave. The barber pats his and Steva's face with eau de toilette. As he massages Steva's face, a man enters holding a giant pear.
What should I do with this, Your Excellency?
Yes. I picked it up for Daria Alexandrovna and the children.
Daria, a.k.a. Dolly, greets the young children.
Bonjour, Lily.
Bonjour.
They're in a line.
Bonjour, Grisha.
Bonjour.
She kisses them.
Vasya.
Dolly scoops up young Vasya in her arms.
Who's coming to see Grandmama?
Me!
Steva hides behind a statue and watches as Dolly escorts the children out.
Come along, my little ducklings.
With one eyebrow cocked, Steva checks the coast is clear, then scurries out. Willowy Anna Karenina sits at a dressing table reading a letter. She lifts her arm with the delicate poise of a ballerina, and a young woman, Anushka, slides a ring onto her finger. Wearing a corset and petticoat, she stands transfixed by the letter as Anushka helps her dress. In the nursery, Steva pops a boiled sweet in his young daughter Tanya's mouth. He's caught doing so by Tanya's pretty governess, Mademoiselle Roland.
Be good today, I'm off.
Steva pats Tanya's cheek and hot-foots it from the room.
Read the chapter carefully. I'll come back to test you on it.
Tanya curtsies.
Read it twice.
Mademoiselle Roland leaves and Tanya huffs. Anna's still reading. Anushka takes a china teacup from her and helps her into a purple dress. She still reads. Steva sneaks away after a liaison with the governess. She blows him a kiss and he bangs his knee as he stumbles through a backstage area. Opening a door, he finds Dolly sobbing and clutching a letter. He tries to retreat, but she turns and holds the letter out to him. In her room, Anna smirks to herself.
Oh, Steva.
The backdrop is winched up on pulleys. Anna descends a flight of steps to the foot of the stage where a man and a woman dance. The stage dressing now resembles a wintry scene. Two men wheel a pair of large bells along on a cart. A new room is quickly constructed in the empty, seatless auditorium, and Anna enters through double doors to join her uniformed husband, Alexei Karenin.
And Dolly found a note from the governess.
Well?
Well, Steva wants me to come to Moscow to persuade Dolly to forgive him.
I'm to be deprived of my wife so that adultery may be forgiven.
A young boy is brought in.
I can't excuse him just because he is your brother.
Oh, it's for Dolly's sake, too.
Four committees today. I have the world waiting for me. There's never time to look at your exercises.
Seryozha is doing very well, Your Excellency.
Who put this shirt on you? Well, never mind. I'll come and hear you read.
Tomorrow, perhaps. Thank you, Lukic. Perhaps tomorrow. No, not tomorrow.
Thank you, Your Excellency. Come along.
Alexei, do you think 9 years of marriage and children should count for nothing against an infatuation?
No. Very well. But sin has a price. You may be sure of that.
Seryozha.
Why?
Because that's where Aunt Dolly lives.
But why?
I told you, Seryozha. She's not well. I must go to see her.
But why, Mama?
Don't make Mama cry. I'll be back before you know and bring you a present.
I don't want a present. I want you to stay.
My little Kotick.
What present?
That's better.
Anna and Seryozha sit beneath a table on which a model train putters around a circuit. It glides through a white winter scene with a little wooden windmill and delicate frosty trees. The lights fade, indicating night, and the train now seems to thunder along. Wearing an ermine stole and fancy hat, Anna sits in a train carriage opposite a well-dressed woman in her 40s. They exchange smiles, and Anna proffers a locket containing a photo of Seryozha.
It's the first time I've left my little boy.
So, you're leaving your son and I'm returning to mine. I'm Countess Vronskaya. I've been in St. Petersburg for the christening of a granddaughter. My elder son married Princess Cherkov.
Anna smiles and lowers her gaze. The Countess narrows her eyes.
You're a charming creature. Why don't I know you?
I've never been in Moscow society, really.
But you know my name.
I've heard you mentioned.
Talked about, you mean? Ah, love.
Was it love?
Always. My sons are ashamed of me, but I'd rather end up wishing I hadn't than end up wishing I had, wouldn't you?
She considers.
I don't know.
Countess Vronsky's smile fades. Anna offers a polite smile and, looking down at the photograph of her son, strokes the locket. In an open plan office, government workers stamp documents in time with one another. Steva descends from his office in a green coat with yellow trim. As he heads for the door, one doorman helps him out of the coat, then another helps him into a blue one.
Some man came without an appointment, Your Excellency, waiting outside.
He goes to the man.
Levin, where did you disappear?
I'm very anxious to see you.
Steva embraces him.
I need your advice.
Well, come into my room then. This is my oldest friend, Konstantin Dmitrievich Levin. Someone send word, I'll be a few minutes late.
Steva takes Levin, who's wearing a sheepskin jacket and broad-brimmed hat, up to his private office.
Oh, I've been hard at it. Sit down.
Hard at what, exactly?
Well, we're overwhelmed with work.
Paperwork?
Paperwork is the soul of Russia. Farming is only the stomach. Now, when am I going to come and shoot some snipe?
Levin removes his hat.
Look at you in Western clothes you told me you'd never wear again. Something's up.
Yes. I'm in love. I've come back to propose. Have you guessed who she is?
I have a suspicion. Why didn't you propose when you were here?
I decided it was impossible. Kitty is of the heavens, an angel, and I am of the earth. But then I thought and thought, and there's no life for me without her.
He looks at Steva.
Do I have a chance?
Of course you do. Shabatsky's giving a soiree this evening. Get there early, before the crowd. And if I may suggest...
Anything, what?
New boots.
Right. Anything else?
We'd better have dinner together. Come on, we'll meet later at L'Angleterre. Or do you prefer the Hermitage? Let's say 5:30 at L'Angleterre. I owe them more than the Hermitage, so it wouldn't be fair to withdraw my custom. New boots, coat, and a proper hat.
They leave, watched by a thin, goat-like doorman in a double-breasted uniform. The workers are all standing. The doorman blows a whistle. The workers wear single-breasted uniforms and green-tinted sun visors. Gathering their belongings, they file out. An accordionist dressed as a sailor wanders through the scene. Then, a clarinetist in a tuxedo, as the surroundings take on the appearance of a street. A man passes on a penny farthing. Grand double doors open to reveal ginger-bearded Levin, stylishly arrayed in a black coat and top hat, and clutching a piece of paper. He squints at it and looks around in confusion as he makes his way through the hustle and bustle.
Excuse me, do you...
He passes the office desks from the previous scene.
Excuse me.
A tuba player ambles by. Male office workers stand in pairs like married couples, those cast as wives having been adorned with feminizing headscarves. They kiss, and removing their office uniforms, the husbands go off to work at L'Angleterre, dressed as waiters. Levin enters and sits down at Steva's table. A waiter brings an ashtray and holds it out for Steva. Staring off pensively, he flicks the ash from his cigar.
It's so unfair. You marry for love. You're a good husband. Children arrive, years depart, and all of a sudden, your wife grows old and tired, and her hair is thin, and her body. And you yourself, you still have your vigor. And then you find yourself a martyr to distraction by so many women.
Forgive me, but I find that incomprehensible. As though I should leave this restaurant and steal a roll from a baker's shop.
Well, you know, a freshly baked roll.
I'm talking about love. And you're talking about your appetite.
Easily confused. Now, do you know Count Bronski?
Who? No. Why?
He's your rival. He turned out from Petersburg after you left.
Who is he?
Oh, you don't need to worry about him. He's a rich, good-looking cavalry officer. Nothing better to do than make love to pretty women. Is that cabbage soup?
Potage au chou à la russe, as the gentleman ordered.
It's what I wanted.
The waiter goes.
Understand that for me tonight is a question of life and death.
Kostya, Kitty would be mad to refuse you. And Dolly's on your side, you know. She says her sister Kitty was always meant to be your wife and will be.
Dolly said that.
He nods unconvincingly.
I've always thought your Dolly's a gem.
She is. She is. I loved her to distraction.
They drink. Levin looks up.
Constantine!
Beaming, Kitty calls down to him from a balcony.
Constantine!
I'm too early. I'll come back.
No. Come up.
She's pretty, dainty, and blonde and wears a girly pink dress. The set of L'Angleterre is whisked away and Levin gawps at the stage from the empty auditorium. A safety curtain rises to reveal Kitty gently fanning herself on stage amidst extravagant fake clouds painted with cherubim. Levin strides forward, then pauses before a central flight of steps before gingerly mounting the stage. Kitty gestures flamboyantly at herself with the fan.
Look at me. I'm receiving for Papa and Maman, who are late to dress. It's my first reception.
Princess Yekaterina. Delighted.
I'm so pleased you're able to be with us, Konstantin Dmitrievich.
Kitty, you look...
He holds the hand he kissed.
You look...
Siva told us you were back. How long are you staying?
I don't know. It depends on you.
On me?
What I mean to say is I only came with one purpose. Will you be my wife?
She looks horrified. Guests of the soiree suddenly flood the stage.
I'm sorry, wrong moment. It's the wrong moment. But will you?
She withdraws her hand.
I can't.
Eyes glistening, she looks away and forces a smile. Staring at her, Levin retreats.
I'm sorry.
Yes. It was impossible.
Head hung, he skulks off.
Sir.
The brother of Nikolai Levin?
Yes.
He's in Moscow. He's staying at the Unicorn in Petrovka.
How do you know?
It's the sort of thing I know.
Levin walks away from the colonel, accidentally bumping into a dashing young man in a brilliant white uniform.
Count Vronsky.
Yes?
The cat's got Levin's tongue. Vronsky smiles awkwardly. Levin watches as Count Vronsky joins the others at the soiree. He takes Kitty's hand and kisses it.
Princess Kitty, it's been so long and yet it seems like yesterday.
It was yesterday.
She smiles bashfully. The doorman from the government offices drapes a coat over Levin's shoulders. He removes Levin's top hat from his own head and sets it on Levin's. Ginger, with back-swept shoulder-length hair, thin faces and beards, they're the spit of each other. Levin climbs a ladder to a wooden gantry above the stage, which duly passes for the street. He squeezes between people milling around. Levin comes to a stop on an elevated walkway and peers down at the soiree, where Count Vronsky sits wooing Princess Kitty. Levin continues on his way and ascends into a loft space where a kettle boils. He stands meekly under the exposed rafters as a man passes by stirring something in a pan. Levin goes to a doorway and looks in on a bearded man at a desk. The man, his brother, stands sharply.
It's Kostya.
Good God. Look at him. You look like a capitalist. What do you want?
Nothing. I came to see you.
Levin spots a timid-looking woman.
Good evening, miss. Madam.
Don't talk to her like that. You sound like a magistrate. More vodka for my brother. Quick about it.
I don't want anything.
I'm all right.
The woman, Maria, fetches vodka.
I told you where to find me.
A colonel in the 3rd Department. They're watching you.
Good. They must think I'm dangerous.
Levin smirks.
What have you got to smile about?
Nothing.
That's right. The day is coming. I have given up my birthright for it. You're on the wrong side of history. Not because privilege is immoral, but because it's irrational.
Maria hurries to his side.
He's sick.
Let go if you know what's good for you. I took Maria Nikolaeva from a brothel, but I consider her my wife. If her presence offends, you're free to leave.
Levin looks at the floor.
Are you married?
No.
Why not? Are you waiting to fall in love?
No.
Good. Romantic love will be the last illusion of the old order.
Maria's crestfallen.
You should marry one of your peasants.
Yes. I damn well should.
Levin quaffs vodka.
The brotherhood of man.
Nikolai does the same. Nikolai staggers to his feet, then slumps down on a couch.
Nikolai, you need to see a doctor. Then come and stay with me at Pravska till you get your health back.
With my wife.
If you...
Nikolai shakes his head.
Or go abroad to a spa.
Levin leaves money for Nikolai.
I'll send more if that's what you want.
Count Vronsky steps out through a door in a painted screen depicting St. Basil's Cathedral. He strolls onto a train station platform where a uniformed guards officer stands holding a bunch of flowers.
Hello, what's this?
Austrian royalty on their honeymoon. I've got them for 4 days.
The private carriage will stop opposite the stand.
Bad luck. What are they like? Art?
Food.
Here's the train.
The guards officer hurries off as the train moves slowly into the station, covered in snow and ice. Steva makes his way through the crowd, looking dapper as always, in a top hat and fur-trimmed coat. Bumping into a young woman, he goes briskly past the guards officer, who looks left and right, tossing his helmet's white horsehair plume as he does so.
I'll come back.
Anna leaves Countess Vronsky with her bags. As she goes to the train's open doors, she passes Count Vronsky, who's boarding the train, and they stop briefly to admire each other.
Steva!
He beams.
Anna!
They rush to each other and embrace on the platform.
You don't look ashamed.
Oh, I am. I really am.
The Count.
Yes, of course. Oblonsky's sister, Karenina.
He watches them.
Charmant, don't you think?
Anna is starting back towards the train when the blackened face of a wheel tapper springs up in front of her. The grim, filthy countenance seems to unsettle Anna, who keeps on and climbs the steps of the train. She watches as the hunched and dirty figure taps at the train's wheels with a metal hammer. Then she returns to her carriage.
There, Countess. You have found your son and I have found my brother.
Madame Karenin has a son, too. It's the first time they've been apart, so she frets about him.
Excuse me for not recognising you before.
Anna smiles.
Au revoir, Countess. Au revoir, my dear. Let me kiss that pretty face.
Anna turns to Count Vronsky, who bows and ceremoniously kisses her gloved hand. The train lurches forward. Sparks fly and the driver pulls on the brake. The wheel tapper's hammer falls to the ground. Steva turns his head. The wheel tapper lies eviscerated under the train.
Keep your people inside until this has been cleared up.
The Count covers him.
The sole support of a large family, they say.
Well, can't anything be done for them?
Wait for me, Mama.
They were leaving the station, but the Count heads back towards the platform.
Stand back. Stand back.
I have you to thank for that.
Count Vronsky hands the station master a thick wad of banknotes.
Oh, what a good fellow. What a good fellow.
In a carriage.
Have you known Count Vronsky long?
Did you like him? He's in love with Kitty.
Ooh. But we should be discussing you and Dolly. What have you got to say for yourself?
I've said it all. On my knees, in tears. Now I need you to say it. I'm going to the office, so you'll have Dolly to yourself.
Don't be late home.
Oh, dear.
Kitty's coming by to see you. She's all grown up, a bit frightened of you. The belle of St. Petersburg society.
Is that who I am?
Dolly and Anna sit down together.
Dolly.
Dolly's holding back tears.
Steve has told me.
She breaks down.
Dolly, I'm sorry. From the bottom of my heart. I don't know what to do. I know. I can't bear to be with him. And he doesn't care. He's got what he wants.
What he wants is you. He loves you, Dolly. You and the children are everything to him.
Are we? And there is room for a governess.
That was shameful, disgraceful, but it was not love. It was the animal in man, not the soul. Steve's remorse is from the soul.
What about me? Does his remorse make it easier for me?
I know you are suffering, but Dolly, you must tell me. Is there enough love left in your heart? Enough to forgive him?
Dolly grimaces.
When I think of them together, I can't forgive him. No.
My poor lamb. So you would rather accept your fate?
My fate? But I haven't done anything. It's him.
Do you love him, Dolly?
Dolly stares through tears. Anna laughs.
You love him and he loves you. But you can't forgive. So your lives must continue like this forever with both of you wretched.
Later, they play with the children in the nursery.
Look for the G for Grisha.
Can you do your whole name?
No, it doesn't look like a princess.
Dolly looks nervous. Dolly follows the kids who rush off to greet their father. Kitty.
Will you stay for the Bobrishev's ball, Anna?
Oh, I always feel dull at a ball.
Steva enters.
Steva, tell Anna she must come to the ball.
Well, of course you must.
Anna glares at Steva.
And God go with you.
You can introduce me to your new governess.
But she's old. She's 100.
I know why you want me to come. You want everyone to be there, because you're quite sure it's going to be your night.
How did you know?
Alphabet blocks.
I know everything.
Anna has spelled out Vronsky.
Oh, to be your age again. Surrounded by that blue mist. I was 18 too when I got married.
She turns a doll's head between her fingers. Night. Anna sits alone in candlelight, turning a child's alphabet block on the table as she stares off in thought. She hears Vronsky arrive.
Is the prince at home?
He's just gone up, I believe.
Is nobody receiving?
I can inquire, sir. I don't think so. The princess retired early. Is there a message?
Count Vronsky glances up to see her observing him from a darkened balcony. Their eyes meet. He nods to her, and she turns away with a start.
No. Thank you.
He leaves. Anna gathers up her voluminous skirt and climbs a flight of wooden steps. She trots briskly along the bare stage, passing Levin in his coat and hat. A street sweeper goes about his business at the foot of the stage. The stage backdrop parts. Levin starts towards a photorealistic backdrop beyond. Stepping into it, he walks across a flat, snow-covered landscape with a dusting of ice on his moustache. A horse is led by. Levin sees a peasant woman wrapped up warm in a hooded red coat, carrying a bundle of sticks on her back. Their eyes meet, and they regard each other in passing. More peasants pass him, carrying firewood. Back at his large wooden house...
We thought you'd come back married.
Did you?
His housekeeper, Agafia, sets a bowl of soup down in front of him.
I
But you only came back with the hat. Black silk hat. What kind of animal can you make a hat like that from? It's not natural.
Next time, perhaps.
There'll be no next time.
Having sat down to sew, wrinkled old Agafia cocks an eyebrow at him. A chicken perched nearby seems to laugh at him, and he glares at it. Resplendent in a billowing white ball gown, her flaxen locks tied up in an intricately plaited bun, Princess Kitty glides into the Bobryshev's grand ballroom like she's walking on air. She greets her hosts with a demure bow, and the silver-haired man of the house kisses her dainty hand. Kitty bows for his wife, then continues down a grand staircase onto the dance floor, where couples waltz. All dressed up in a suit, a blonde boy of perhaps 12 or 13 years old approaches Kitty.
Kitty.
He kisses her hand.
May I have a waltz?
You may, Boris. I'll save you the third, just because it's your firstborn.
You're my first conquest.
Open-mouthed, he nods, does a little turn and scurries off. A raven-haired gallant in an embroidered jacket sweeps Kitty off to dance. They turn gracefully amongst the other guests. Anna enters holding hands with Steva. She wears a black off-the-shoulder dress and black fascinator. Steva wears a red sash between his dark jacket and white shirt. The flamboyantly dressed gallant Korsunsky twirls beneath Kitty's raised hand.
Where do you want to be taken?
She sees Anna.
There.
Pirouetting with a Mediterranean flair, Korsunsky almost resembles a matador. He plucks Kitty from the floor and raises her aloft to the delight of the other guests, who clap as she spreads her arms like a ballerina and is delivered to Anna's feet. Korsunsky takes his leave of them. Count Vronsky watches.
How are you, Steva?
Thanks to Anna, I am a happy man. Would you like to dance?
No, ask Anna.
No, I don't.
She sees Vronsky prowling towards her and thinks better of it.
Come on then.
Oh, look out.
Anna spirits Steva away and Vronsky continues to the spot where they were standing. Contemplating her, he draws slowly on a cigarillo. He watches as Anna and Steva dance a neatly choreographed waltz. Kitty smiles at Count Vronsky, who in a genteel manner raises a hand for her to take. She does so and Vronsky pays her hand an oblique glance as they start towards the dance floor. Already, Kitty senses his distraction. They begin to dance. As they turn and sway slowly beneath their joined hands, Count Vronsky all the while gazes covetously at Anna. Prince and Princess Shcherbatsky.
This vile, idiotic matchmaking of yours.
For goodness sake, what have I done?
Kitty.
Is anything the matter?
No.
As Kitty's eyes are averted, the Count steals another glance at Anna.
You look as lovely as ever, Princess Kitty.
He offers his arm, and taking it, she's escorted to her parents. Without so much as a by your leave, Count Vronsky walks away, leaving her quite upset.
Don't ask me, Mama.
Boris.
Kitty, it's us next.
She's tight-lipped.
Princess, I have the honour to claim my dance.
He offers his hand with an as-yet unpracticed affectation of civility, and forcing a smile, Kitty dutifully accompanies him to the dance floor. As they bob and sway like graceful marionettes, Kitty casts her gaze up at Count Vronsky, consorting with fellow cavalry officers on a balcony. Prince Shcherbatsky dances with Countess Nordston.
You'll dance the berserker with Kitty. You'll see.
Count Vronsky holds court. As his chums turn their attentions to one another, he looks down at Anna. When she returns his gaze, he looks away briefly, but his eyes soon meet hers once more. Catching herself staring at the dashing Count, Anna quickly looks ahead. A wry smile plays on her lips. Steva passes by with a young lady.
I really am.
Anna chuckles. The Count has vanished from the balcony. Just when she appears saddened, he steps up behind her.
Dance with me.
She keeps her back to him.
I'm not used to being spoken to like that by a man I met once at a railway station.
I dare say, but if I'm not to dance with you, then I'm getting out of this operetta and going home.
Then for Kitty's sake.
She spins round and clasps his left hand with her right. With his right hand placed on the small of her back and her left on his shoulder, they weave their way across the dance floor. The other dancers appear frozen in time, caught statuesque in varied postures as Vronsky and Anna revolve, lost in each other's eyes. Guests burst into motion again, as if waking unbidden from some spell. With a deliberate and elegant display, Count Vronsky continues his seduction. Anna lifts her slender arms and the Count runs his hands down them from the wrists. Hooking his thumbs under Anna's elevated arms, he lifts her in the air and spins. She breathes tremulously as he lowers her. As they dance on, they appear alone on the dance floor, two figures outside of time. The house lights dim, and they waltz in their own personal spotlight. Their feet trip lightly to a stop, and their arms cascade in slow, sinuous motions, their eyes magnetized. The room once again illuminated. They continue to dance, surrounded by the other waltzing guests. Partnered with a high-ranking military man in a duck-egg blue uniform, Kitty is a picture of exasperation. She watches helplessly as Anna and the Count romance each other. Steva indicates Anna to the young woman he's with. In synchrony, the men lift their partners and set them down again. Kitty can't tear her eyes off Anna and the Count, whose arms rise and fall like the wings of a dove. Having switched partners again, Kitty grows more desperate, her eyes darting to and fro to keep track of the Count and her new rival for his affections. Once more, she switches partners, but still Anna and the Count dance together. Now with this man and now with that, Kitty gapes in horror as Anna and the Count continue oblivious. People have begun to talk and stare, the tension on the dance floor now palpable. Panting, Kitty lets go of her partner and stands staring across the dance floor. Anna catches sight of Kitty, who shoots her an accusatory look. The Count stiffens and bridles slightly, his hands behind his back. As the penny drops, Anna looks shocked and contrite. She hurries over to Kitty, who fights back her sobs and takes to the dance floor in Anna's place. Standing a fair few feet apart, Kitty and the Count dance without touching. Anna runs to the side of the room and stares aghast at her broken reflection in a diamond pane of glass. Reflected behind her, a steam train rushes forth. Its mighty pistons and crankshafts propel it along. Anna sits aboard a carriage, ostensibly reading. Her eyes dart up from the page as she snaps to from a daydream. The crankshafts pump repetitively. Flushed, she holds the cold steel of a nail file to her cheek and closes her eyes. Flashes of Kitty and Count Vronsky dancing. Sparks are ground from the heavy metal wheels of the train. The words of a book rush by.
Next stop is Malagoya. Malagoya, next stop.
The intense pumping of the crankshafts slows to a stop, and Anna steps off the ice-covered train into the cold night air. The wind ruffles Anna's furs as a wheel tapper moves along the side of the train. Anna turns to see Count Vronsky emerge through an icy squall.
Can I be of service to you?
Snowflakes flutter in the air. Vronsky's brow is pinched.
Why are you leaving Moscow?
What else can I do?
He steps closer.
I have to be where you are.
Stop, that's enough. Go back to Kitty. This is wrong.
It makes no difference.
You have no right.
It makes no difference.
You must forget me. If you're a good man, you'll forget everything.
And you, will you forget?
Her eyes moisten.
Yes.
She goes. Seated aboard the train, Anna broods. Her damp eyes rove in thought. Thick steam issues in a continuous trail from the train's funnel as it snakes its way across the snowy landscape. The headlight gleams as they enter a tunnel. Day. Vronsky disembarks the train at a busy station and stalks through the crowd in search of Anna. He stops and watches from a distance as she gets off in front of Alexei.
Is Seryozha all right?
Oh, is that all I get?
Yes, he's quite well. Were you a success?
I? Oh, Dolly and Steva. Yes, I think so.
They walk arm in arm. Vronsky addresses a servant as he enters his house.
I'll announce myself.
Very good, sir.
Vronsky! The master himself.
Baroness, coffee from the new coffee pot for Count Vronsky.
I'll be off home if I'm in the way.
You're at home where you are, Baroness.
Oh, Pierre, you never say such pretty things to me. We were just discussing my husband. He won't divorce me, you see, and do you know why?
No.
Because he likes eating off my family silver. I want to bring an action. Just because I'm supposed to be unfaithful, I don't see why I have to eat off Pierre's crockery. Look at it.
It's my crockery.
Oh.
I was Moscow. Provincial.
Oh. Bare-chested Pierre fences thin air with a foil. Night. Back in the theatre. The stage now plays home to Seryozha's bedroom. Anna lies next to him, watching him sleep. She strokes him softly with her fingertips.
Thank you for my presence.
He keeps his eyes closed. Anna holds her son's hand to her lips. Alexei sits in an armchair in a candlelit room. A servant brings him a drink. Next door, Anna sits reading a letter. A pensive Alexei cracks his knuckles. The servant circles him and hands him some papers. Seated at her dressing table, Anna screws up the letter. Alexei comes in and frowns.
I'm writing to Dolly and to Kitty.
She smiles up at him.
You are good.
He gives her shoulder a squeeze, and she kisses his hand. Wearing a black robe with a square of white shirt showing through the middle of his upright collar, bespectacled Alexei resembles a priest. Solemnly, he turns away.
Time for bed.
He leaves the room, and Anna sighs. Anna gets into bed.
What are they saying in Moscow about the new statute?
What new statute?
He takes out a glass box.
The new statute I carried in council.
No one mentioned it.
Really?
From the box, he takes a contraceptive sheath.
Huh.
Anna's heart sinks as he approaches the bed.
Here it caused quite a sensation.
Removing his glasses, he blows out a bedside candle. Day, people skate on the surface of a frozen lake. Anna is pushed along in a sledge by a male servant. Likewise transported, blonde Princess Betsy giggles at her in passing. Anna sees Count Vronsky watching from astride his horse at the side of the ice rink. He nods to her, and she covers her mouth to hide her smile. Vronsky finds the women in an art gallery.
Princess Betsy?
Cousin, I didn't know you were an art lover.
I'm prepared to be one.
He glances over at Anna, who stands apart from them. Betsy bows courteously to Anna as their eyes meet. Returning the gesture, Anna goes on her way. A young boy performs at a piano recital. Anna sits in the audience next to Betsy, who has a white chihuahua in her lap. The dog breaks wind. Anna stifles a smile as Betsy removes her hands from the dog. As a male guest takes the dog away, Anna tries not to grimace at the smell. She spots Count Vronsky descending onto a landing overlooking the recital, and her chest heaves. She quickly looks away. Evening. Anna and Alexei are leaving the house together.
Countess Lydia tells me you haven't been to one of her evenings since you returned.
The last one was to meet a missionary. The one before that was for a lecture on the union of the Greek and Roman churches.
She stops.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know you're fond of her. Come on, we'll be late.
They head out and a servant closes double doors. In a cabaret club, women dance on stage. They lift their long, frilly skirts to afford the audience a glimpse of their undergarments. Men pop out from between their legs and do backflips. A waitress chips ice from a huge block. Vronsky is drinking at the bar with another cavalryman, Demin.
Here's the thing, Vronsky. Posting's come up and there's a promotion in it for you.
Thank you, sir.
The garrison in Tashkent.
Tashkent? But I would like to stay in Peters, if you don't mind.
Well, I don't mind. But your mother, it's her idea.
For once, the theatre is a theatre, and the auditorium is filled with seated patrons. Count Vronsky thrusts his coat on a doorman and enters the lobby. He tips his hat to Alexei and strides by. Anna sits next to Lydia in the audience.
Your husband is a saint, and we must all cherish him for Russia's sake.
Count Vronsky sits down next to Betsy. He makes to kiss her hand, but she retracts it.
You didn't come to my dinner.
I had to see my commanding officer.
Well, she didn't come either.
He looks at Anna through theatre glasses.
I do hope you can come on afterwards. Father Christoph's report on the Chinese mission will be with lantern slides.
Oh, I'm expected at the Tverskoys.
No doubt. But I'm sure that Princess Betsy can wait for you.
Anna looks through theatre glasses to see Vronsky observing her. She looks away quickly, in time to see a conductor bow to the audience.
Yes, in fact, I don't think I will go to Betsy's.
You're caught.
He lowers the binoculars.
I'm afraid I'm becoming quite ridiculous.
The band strikes up. The safety curtain rises and the set transitions from the theatre to Betsy's grand home, the Tverskoy house. The guests are frozen in time, bent backwards beneath low-hanging chandeliers like contorted waxworks. The Count enters, cigarillo smouldering between his fingers. He puffs out smoke and the guests begin to move in slow motion. Women flick out their hand fans. The princesses seat themselves.
Now, there's a phenomenon. Look, Anna's shadow has arrived before Anna.
I'm Anna's friend. But all this making up one's mind to it in public is not polite to a distinguished man like Karenin.
In my opinion, Karenin is a fool, and Anna is the best of us.
And we all love you for your contrary opinions, Princess.
Princess Merkelova and Princess Myakaya leave Princess Betsy alone with Anna's flame-haired friend. His hair charmingly dishevelled, Count Vronsky makes a beeline for Betsy and kisses her hand. He kneels.
Alexei, you look desperate. It's not attractive.
I'm losing hope.
Hope of what? Persuading a virtuous woman to break her marriage vows.
No, you're right. She won't come.
Anna wears a mauve dress, red fascinator and pearl necklace. Matching pearl earrings dangle from her ears as she struts at pace through the lobby. All eyes fall upon her as she enters the soiree. The women present eye her disapprovingly. A bearded gentleman takes Anna's hand and kisses it. They dance fleetingly. Then Anna dances with Betsy.
He's gone. But you're just in time for the surprise.
Fireworks. Flames shower from two large Catherine wheels which spin on the stage. Anna lifts her gaze and the guests bend backward to afford themselves a better view of the pyrotechnics. A large circular section of the ceiling slides away, opening up the roof of the theatre to the night sky, where fireworks explode in a glittering display. Anna closes her eyes with a sigh and stands with her head tilted backwards. The exploding fireworks are reflected in the passenger window of a moving carriage in which Vronsky is now seated. He lowers the window.
Turn round.
To Anna.
May I have the honour of bringing you an ice?
Anna tilts her head forward again, and the watching ladies fan themselves as she turns to face Vronsky.
Ices are being served.
Hand fans flutter.
I would prefer to try a cigarette.
She sinks demurely onto a seat, and Vronsky produces a cigarette case, snapping his fingers so as to open it in one and the same action. Anna takes one. He lights it, and she inhales. With a sensual stroke of her arm, he relieves her of the cigarette.
Courage.
I'll try another one sometime.
When? Where?
Just as I was thinking your manners had improved since Moscow. You behaved badly. Very badly.
Who was responsible for that?
She rises and he takes her place.
Give me a cup of tea.
Betsy, who sits by a tea urn, obliges. Anna goes and Vronsky sits down with Betsy.
How nice. Alexei Alexandrovich has arrived.
Princess Merkelova.
I'm not sure my nerves can stand another Alexei at this moment.
Vronsky goes to Anna, but Princess Myagkaya quickly steers them away from Alexei.
Were you glad to see me or not?
So the Schussbergs asked us to dinner. The sauce was said to have cost 1,000 rubles, and it was ghastly.
Alexei stalks in proprietorially and looks around.
I gave them a sauce that cost 85 kopecks, and it was a triumph.
She leaves them alone.
This must stop. You made me feel as if I were guilty of something.
What do you want me to do?
I want you to go to Moscow and beg Kitty to forgive
you. No, that's not what you want. Moscow, you do better than that. Tonight I refuse to posting a Tashkent. I could change my mind and you'll never see me again.
If you have any thought for me, you will give me back my peace.
I have no peace to give. There can be no peace for us. Only misery, my greatest happiness.
Betsy and Alexei.
Your husband is impossible. His opinions are all wrong, but he talks so brilliantly he wins every argument.
What?
I called to take you home.
No, I'm staying. Send the carriage back for me.
Of course.
She smiles, but Alexei is stony-faced. Later, Anna is leaving. She steps out into a hallway and puts her hands together in troubled thought. Double doors swing open as Vronsky strides out and approaches her with a frown. She looks worried.
Do you want me to go to Tashkent?
Holding his gaze uncertainly, she takes a deep breath and holds it. A doorman hands Anna's fur coat to Vronsky and she turns away, allowing him to place it over her shoulders. She starts off up a flight of stairs.
So I'll go to Tashkent.
No!
She stops and turns her head.
I don't want you to go.
Count Vronsky's mouth falls open slightly, and he looks at her in shock. Teary-eyed, she turns in a hurry and rushes off up the stairs. She passes through double doors, then stands with her back to them. Pulling her coat tightly around her neck, she rubs her hands together and blows them warm as she starts into her house.
I stayed up to talk to you.
She looks through a crack into the bedroom where she sees Alexei in his night clothes. She walks on.
What about? It's late. Where's Anushka?
Alexei sits by the desk.
I sent her off.
Well, if you want to talk, but we should go to bed.
I must warn you about something.
Warn me? Oh, it's really rather late.
I wish to warn you that you may inadvertently, by indiscretion and carelessness, give the world occasion to talk about you.
I am not a committee. Please say what you want to tell me.
He looks up at her in the half-light.
You and Count Vronsky attracted attention tonight.
Anna turns away.
Well, you don't like it when I don't talk to people, and you don't like it when I do.
I didn't notice anything myself, but I saw everyone else notice. I consider jealousy to be insulting to you and degrading to me. I have no right to inquire into your feelings. They concern only your conscience. But it's my duty to remind you that we are bound together by God. And this bond can only be broken by a crime against God.
I have nothing to say to you.
And you have a son.
And I'm tired.
She strides out of the bedroom. Alexei appears in a doorway and looks in on her to find her undressing. He averts his eyes.
If I am wrong, I ask your pardon.
She has her back to him.
I don't know what you're talking about. And it's really too late for this.
She's naked from the waist up. He looks at her.
Excuse me, please.
Alexei walks away. Anna lies in bed. The light is blown out and Alexei lies down beside her. She stares upwards.
Too late.
A warm glow suddenly bathes her and she sits bolt upright. Vronsky's hands glide over her body. Wearing a black veil, she walks a street at night. In the dark, Vronsky caresses her and she closes her eyes. In daylight, Vronsky opens his door to Anna. She enters wearing the black veil and strides right past him before turning to look at him. He makes love to her from behind. Clothed, Vronsky holds a hand out behind him. Anna's small feminine hand reaches out and touches it. her wedding ring glimmers. As he leads her along, she and Vronsky alternate hands as if dancing. He guides her along a corridor. In the darkened bedroom, their bodies writhe. Naked, their lips clash. Clothed, Anna lifts the veil from over her eyes. Handsome and muscular, Vronsky throws his head back. Anna's limber body bends like the drooping bough of a tree as he thrusts between her legs.
Oh, God. Oh, forgive me. It's the end of everything. I've got nothing left now except you. Remember that.
But can I not remember?
They rise into a close embrace.
Happiness. You murdered my happiness. Oh, murderer. Murderer. Go on. Murderer. Yes. Murderer. Go on. Murderer. Murderer.
He kisses her breasts. Day. Cold blue light falls over a lake. Levin and Steva are squirreled away behind trees with shotguns in their hands.
Look out, here they come!
Something falls from the sky.
Oh, bad luck.
Levin glares, then smiles. A gun dog races off into the long grass. They finish eating at Levin's.
Mm. Potage aux choux, à la russe. Agafia, if you opened up in Moscow, the Longlotaire would go out of business.
She takes a plate.
It's true. You want news of Moscow?
Babylon? No.
Oh, you're right. What do you care? You love the country. You've got it. You love agriculturing. Lord knows you've got that. You love shooting. You've got that. You've got everything you want.
All right, go on then. Have you stopped stealing bread rolls?
Ballet girl, oriental type. How can I help it?
How are the Shabatskys?
You mean Kitty?
Is she engaged now?
Nope. Vronsky went back to Petersburg. Kitty will be seeing Dolly at Yugoshevo in the summer. You could very easily...
Oh, yes, as if I had time in the summer. And I've got extra land at Kashin this year for the haymaking...
Kashin, that's on the Yugoshevo Road, isn't it? Won't you see Kitty when she's there?
Especially not then. I humiliated myself once.
Oh, damn you, Kostya! You love Kitty! You love Kitty and you can't forgive her, because first, you funked it, and then you bungled it, and then you ran away from an 18-year-old girl who was made a fool of by a uniform. Not you I feel sorry for, it's Kitty.
Her heart told her no. Did you come to shoot snipe or criticise me?
Levin looks away and Steva throws a napkin in his face. Kitty sits holding Dolly's baby.
Have you told him like a parcel? Oh, it's Aunt Kit, darling. Doesn't he make you ashamed of dwelling on your troubles?
I have no troubles.
That man wasn't worth the tears, believe me.
I don't care about him. I don't even think about him or her. Except to hate her.
And we'll never speak of it again.
Dolly scoops up the baby.
There are better men waiting for you. Steva says...
Grimacing slightly, Dolly turns to look at Kitty.
Kitty, my lamb. Did Constantine...
What has Levin got to do with it? Anyway, I'll never get married. The whole business of it's become disgusting to me. And look what it's done for you. Why do they call it love?
Because it's love.
Anna and Vronsky lie on a white blanket in a sun-dappled forest.
I want you to. I don't care about it.
You should care. Anyway, someone might be watching.
They're both dressed from head to toe in brilliant white garments. Anna sits up and looks around brazenly, then casts a glance skyward through the lush green forest canopy.
But I'm damned anyway.
I'm not. I'm blessed.
She straddles him.
You love me?
Yes.
Only me?
No.
She frowns, then looks relieved.
Apart from Frou Frou?
Yes.
But me more than your horse?
Yes.
She narrows her eyes.
Are you happy?
He smiles.
Yes.
And you love me?
Yes.
She lifts her chin.
How much?
This much.
This much?
Yeah.
This much?
Yes.
And this much?
Yes.
This much?
Yes.
This much? And this much?
Her body rises and falls on top of him. She licks his top lip, then probes his mouth with her tongue. He responds and their tongues writhe as they share hungry open-mouthed kisses. He kisses her swan-like neck and she clenches her eyes shut.
Master, this is love. This.
Alexei is in his study when Countess Lydia enters.
Countess.
He hands papers to her.
I thought you would be at Peterhof now.
I've come from there. I'm distressed that you haven't taken your usual house this year.
Anna wanted a change.
Nearer to Princess Betsy at Charkoy Salor.
She gives him a frank look.
The guards are in summer camp at Charkoy. Alexei Alexandrovich. Forgive me, but you are too tolerant. Your wife
is... Oh, is this about my wife? My wife is beyond reproach. She is, after all, my wife.
He looks injured. Night. Vronsky is with his fellow guards, drinking and making merry. A man, Alexander, strides over.
Alyosha! Alyosha!
They embrace.
A message from Maman. Her friend, Princess Sorokin, has a house here, and a virgin daughter. Well, that's not part of the message, but they'll all be at the races, and you're expected to supper afterwards.
Gentlemen! Gentlemen! I give you the regiment! The regiment!
Vronsky and Alexander quaff shots. They sit together outside.
I heard you turned down a promotion.
That was Mamor interfering.
Yes. Now she's come up with a princess for you. Alexei, we're brothers, so don't take offense. Getting married puts the pack on your back. It leaves your hands free for climbing the ladder. Getting serious about a married woman is like carrying your pack in your arms.
So they talk about me.
He pats his brother's shoulder.
I'm leaving, Sasha.
An assignation?
Come on, I'll introduce you.
His horse, Frou Frou, rears up nearby.
Beautiful. A man would come to no harm.
A groom holds the horse's reins.
You think you'll win tomorrow?
McCourtin's gladiator's favourite. 16 hands.
Frou Frou looks dainty beside him.
She's got heart. Haven't you, my darling?
Day. Holding a parasol, Anna stands in a field of windswept grasses. His flaxen locks blown wild by the wind, Vronsky strides up nearby and looks over at her. He approaches to find her with her eyes closed.
Anna.
She spins round.
Alexei. What is it?
I couldn't bear not to see you before the race.
A luminous smile shines from her face, and she puts her head on his chest. He holds her tight.
What were you thinking about?
She's pensive. He lifts her chin and looks her in the eye.
Tell me.
His thumb lingers, stroking her.
I'm pregnant.
His eyes light up.
My love.
She stares at him.
Well, love was never a game to us. Here's an end to living in corners. Existing day to day on lies. Yes. Now we can be together.
How can we, Alexei?
Tell Karenin everything.
Do you think my husband will make you a present of me?
Leave him.
Leave him and be your mistress.
Yes. Run away.
She smiles.
I would never see my son again. The laws are made by husbands and fathers.
What then?
He looks fraught.
I'll never forgive myself for your unhappiness.
Unhappiness? I'm like a starving beggar who's been given food. I unhappy.
She lifts her eyebrows.
No.
She beams.
This is my happiness.
Seryozha's in a hedge maze.
Seryozha! Seryozha, I'm coming to get you!
He turns a corner and hides behind a statue.
Where are you? Seryozha! Where are
Alexei.
How are you, young man? Your tutor doesn't seem to be in evidence.
Anna springs out on Seryozha, but jumps on seeing Alexei.
Alexei, you got away at last. Can you stay?
Why?
He kisses her hand.
Go and find Vasily Lukitch.
Seryozha goes.
I have to change. Princess Betsy is sending her trap for me. Would you like to come? She's taking me to watch the race.
Races? Surely. No, I'll come on later, then I must get back to town.
In the theatre, uniformed men on horseback circle an enclosure filled with people. Men in top hats wave betting slips at the trackside. Alexei steps up. He watches Anna, who's seated in the dress circle. She puts theatre glasses to her eyes so as to watch Count Vronsky ride by on his magnificent steed. Anna looks flustered with excitement. Alexei leaves his spot at trackside. Steva overflows with elation as he wins a cup and ball game. Anna opens a pocket mirror and angles it so as to see behind her. She sees Alexei and snaps it shut.
Princess! Princess! A bet! Will you fancy the next?
Kisilov.
I'm on Vronsky. Pair of gloves?
Done.
Betsy spots Alexander arrive.
Alexander Vronsky.
Alexei watches closely as Anna and Alexander nod genially to each other across the circle. Alexander's other half bids him to sit down. Countess Vronsky is sitting next to Princess Sorokina.
You're an exquisite creature. You really ought to be the spoils of victory today.
Anna is palpably nervous as the safety curtain is raised. Frozen like mannequins, the spectators wait with bated breath. Wearing a pink hat, Anna beats a hand fan incessantly beneath her chin. Alexei watches Anna's persistent display of tension through binoculars. She raises her theatre glasses as horses race out across the stage. They thunder by, entering stage left and vanishing stage right. Vronsky's at the rear. Alexei watches as Anna clenches her fist so hard she snaps her fan. Backstage, the race continues. Vronsky draws level with another jockey. Alert to Vronsky's efforts, the rider whips his horse with a crop. They pass a painted backdrop of race day spectators. Frou Frou is surging forward. Anna watches intently. Vronsky slips and Frou Frou crashes down off the stage, throwing him violently from the saddle.
Alexei!
The horse spasms.
I'm here.
Anna shakes her husband's hand from her shoulder. Vronsky limps round his flailing horse. In the circle, all eyes are on Anna as she weeps and wails.
I'm here.
Vronsky grips the reins and yanks them.
Get up!
An officer restrains Vronsky.
Her back is broken.
Bereft, Vronsky slides a pistol from its holster and cocks the hammer. Teeth gritted, Anna looks back at Alexei as Vronsky puts Frou Frou to sleep. A sadness fills Vronsky's eyes. Alexei and Anna ride home in a carriage.
You know, they say the Emperor disapproves of the races. The danger of injury. But I...
What?
I'm saying I think there's a value in manly sport for the military.
I don't understand.
In my opinion, it's not the sport itself. It's the spectacle. It's making a cruel spectacle
out. What are you talking about?
I have to tell you.
Yes.
I have to tell you, you behaved improperly today.
How is that?
I'm making plain your feeling when one of the riders fell. Your conduct was improper. It must not occur again. I have said it before. You will say my concern is unnecessary and ridiculous. You are my wife. I'm wrong to think that.
His brow tightens.
Yes. Perhaps I was mistaken.
No.
She shakes her head.
You are not mistaken. I love him. I am his mistress.
Alexei bites his bottom lip.
Do what you like to me.
He swallows. The carriage jolts. Alexei stares down, ashen-faced. Anna's eyes dart left and right. A man approaches the carriage.
Wait, please, move away.
The man does as he's told. Alexei looks down his nose at Anna.
I will not have a scandal. Therefore, you will not see this man again. You will behave in a way that nothing is known against you, by society or by the servants. In return, you will keep the privileges of a wife and the duties. Tomorrow you will return home. That is all.
He turns his face away from her. Anna springs from the vehicle and tramps off into the gloaming. She pulls the hat from her head and peels off her jacket, flings them both to the ground, and whips off her gloves. Tossing them, she marches purposefully into the hedge maze. She turns a corner and strides up behind Vronsky, enveloping him in her arms and resting her head on his shoulder.
Are you hurt?
He shrugs himself free and turns round.
What's happened?
I told him I'm your mistress. He thinks I can give you up and go on living.
No, you cannot.
She plants a firm, decisive kiss on his lips, and he reciprocates, pulling her closer. They nuzzle and smooch some more. Night. Seryozha's fast asleep. In keeping with painted galleons on his bedroom wall, his bed is shaped like a boat, its high headboard matched at the opposite end to resemble the prow and stern, respectively. Anna sits down on his mattress. Wearing a sumptuous crimson dress and dripping with pearls, she bends over and gives him a lingering kiss on the cheek. Anna steps into the master bedroom where Alexei is sitting at the desk. He looks up from some paperwork.
Time for bed.
Anna purses her lips and turns away. Stiffly, Alexei puts down the papers and shuts a large medal in its box. Anna waits for him in bed.
It was pleasant to hear you being congratulated on your husband. Not that I care for decorations, but...
Alexei, I can't. I'm sorry.
He's taken out the sheath.
But I'm his wife now.
He seems taken aback. Anna sits up and her dark eyes widen.
I'm having his child.
Alexei is breathless. He blinks. With his head hung and both hands on the little rectangular box, he crosses the room and puts the contraceptive away in a cabinet. Cracking his knuckles, Alexei goes calmly from the room. Anna pulls back the covers and rises from the bed. Leaving the room, she finds him sitting alone in a chair on the empty stage.
Tell me what I did to deserve this.
Her melancholy air suggests a mixture of contrition and pity. The stage lights slowly fade, casting Alexei into darkness. A scythe is sharpened, used to mow a field, then sharpened again. It passes through the grass without apparent resistance, like the fin of a fish through water. Levin stands in a broad row of farmhands working the land. They toil in rhythm, sweeping left and right in synchrony. A bearded man cups a hand to his mouth.
Oh!
Levin wipes his brow. Night. As the other farmhands commune around a fire in the open air, Levin sits apart from them with his back to a tree. He watches a peasant woman ladle soup into a bowl for a young man who lovingly kisses her hand. Levin's eyes fill with sadness. A man brings Levin soup and sits down.
How many mowers is it, Theodore?
I've asked you to, Master. In your father's time, it was work for 2 days for 30 men. Though he never picked up a scythe himself.
The men don't like me for it.
They like what they used to.
It settles me.
How's that, Master?
When I'm mowing, I don't ask myself why I'm here.
You're here to be Master Konstantin Dmitrievich, as he's always been, by the grace of God.
My father owned you, Theodore. Owned you like chattels to be bought and sold. Was that by the grace of God?
It was. That's my youngest you were looking at there. His young life is perilous now since the freedom came and work must be found.
They look happier than I've ever been.
He sees the peasant woman he passed in the winter.
Is it living simply that I'm looking for?
His eyes linger on her. Pale, with slender, elegant features, flushed red lips and dark eyes, she smiles nervously at him and lowers her gaze. In the low light of the small hours, Levin lies sleeping on a bale of hay. Morning fog hangs in a spectral veil over the open fields. Hearing the low rumbling of a passing carriage, Levin sits up and looks out towards the noise. In the back of the carriage is Kitty. She has her eyes closed and her head angled into the gentle caress of the morning air, and wears long blue ribbons around her wrist which flicker tantalizingly in the breeze. She fans her fingers, and the thin ribbons dance between them as her head bobs serenely in sympathy with the motion of the carriage. Levin stands up. Unseen, he gazes out after her, the dim shape of his figure melting into the golden glow of the sunrise. Count Vronsky wakes to find himself alone and sees a note on the bedside table. He snatches it up urgently, and fumbling to extricate it from its envelope, he reads. Briefcase in hand, Alexei descends his stairs in a long maroon coat. He takes his top hat and gloves from a doorman and exits through one set of doors as Count Vronsky makes his entrance through another. Separated by a pane of glass, the men look at each other, then go their separate ways. Vronsky dumps his coat and hat on the doorman.
I'm expected.
He marches upstairs to find Anna waiting for him.
No. I will not live like this. This waiting for hour after hour, not knowing when I'll ever see you again. I'm sorry. It's my demon, I can't help it.
You wrote that you were ill.
Don't worry, it won't be for long.
Stop.
No, it's true. I was told it in a dream.
There. It was only a bad dream.
Yes, and I'm only going to die of having your baby.
That's all nonsense.
Tell me it is. Tell me it is.
He stiffens as she strokes him.
You love me, only me.
Your note said your husband would be out.
He was late. That serves him right.
He walks away from her.
And you? Why do you call him my husband? I mean, he isn't my husband. He's a
cop. But it was awkward. My honour. You made an agreement.
Do you think of your honour when you're sharing halls with your colonel?
Your demon again.
She winces.
I'll be glad to die before you start to hate me.
Anna.
She grins.
Put your hand there. Oh, you can feel him move.
Alexei sits brooding in a meeting.
I respectfully ask Minister Karenin whether his proposals for the regulation of these colourful gypsy tribes, of these scholarly, God-fearing Jews, and of... But I'm afraid I've lost the minister's attention.
Alexei returns home.
Who is here? Only Madame, Your Excellency.
Eyes narrowed, Alexei barrels in impetuously and looks around as Anna bursts through from an adjacent room.
I wanted to see
her. I do not wish to know why a woman wants to see her lover.
He yanks open a cabinet.
What are you doing?
I want his letter!
As she assails him, he shoves her to the ground. Punching a hole in the cabinet, he takes the letters.
I am going to Moscow tomorrow, and then the provinces with a commission to investigate conditions among the Jews and Gypsies, whose conditions I infinitely prefer to my own. I will not return to this house until divorce has driven you into the street. Meanwhile, my son will be sent to live with my eldest sister.
No, Alexei, please. Please, leave me, Seryozha.
Do you think I would let you have my son? You are depraved, a woman without honour. I thank God the curse of love is lifted from me.
He leaves her clutching her swollen belly. Steva's office workers stamp their paperwork with mechanical proficiency and stand to greet him as he enters. He is relieved of his outdoor coat and helped fluently into a loose-fitting jacket by the doorman. He finds Levin waiting for him, dressed to the nines.
I need your advice.
Steva grins like a Cheshire cat.
Come on, come on.
Yes, yes.
Steva hurries Levin into his home.
Right, after you, after you. Are we late?
Of course you're late. I'm Countess Nordstrom. We nearly met at the Shabatskys last winter.
Come into the fold.
Come on.
A gathering is underway. He kisses a girl's hand.
You've been waiting for me. Forgive me.
Oh. Dolly escorts him in.
Kitty is here.
Dolly goes as Kitty turns to face him.
Constantine, what a long time since we saw each other.
Since you saw me, but I saw you not so long ago.
When?
You were driving to Yugoshevo. I was at Kashin for the haymaking.
Oh, but why didn't
you? I'm so glad to see you.
He smiles.
You're just the same.
She looks down.
I hope not. I was young and silly in those days.
Months and months ago.
She gazes up at him.
And you haven't changed?
No. I haven't.
Their eyes remain locked. Steva blusters in.
Permit me to announce. Soup, Mary Louise, carp with asparagus and roast beef. I went to the market in person.
A servant presents a note to Steva on a tray.
An extra place.
He and Alexei talk in private.
I've come to tell you our connection must be severed. I'm going to divorce your sister.
Divorce? Oh, dear me, what are you talking about? Well, don't be in a hurry. Stay to dinner, and later you can talk it over with Dolly.
Prince Oblonsky, everything is over between our families.
Alexei, divorce is one thing. Dinner is quite another.
You Petersburgers think yourself so de bon ton compared with dull, old-fashioned Moscow. But we know how to do things. Only the other day, I hear Vasya Pryachnikov fought a duel with Kwitsky and killed him.
What
was the challenge about?
Pryachnikov's wife, naturally.
It was a matter of honor, defending a woman's honor.
Sounds like barbarism to me. What if the lover had killed the husband? Would that have preserved the wife's honor, too?
Still not many of us can say our lover died for love.
Love? Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife.
Alexei hangs his head as the dining room falls silent. Levin sends a melancholy look at Kitty, who averts her eyes. Countess Nordston pipes up again.
Would you die for love, Konstantin Dmitrievich?
I would, but not for my neighbour's wife.
He falters, then...
An impure love is not love to me. To admire another man's wife is a pleasant thing, but sensual desire indulged for its own sake is greed, a kind of gluttony, and a misuse of something sacred, which is given to us so that we may choose the one person with whom to fulfill our humanness.
He glances towards the end of the table.
Otherwise we might as well be cattle.
Ah, an idealist.
Alexei simmers. Kitty smiles at Levin. Later.
But she will be nobody's wife. She'll be ruined.
I tried to save her. She chose ruin.
Alexei Alexandrovich, look at me. You will have no peace of mind until you forgive her. It was Anna who taught me that.
I do not wish to forgive. I'm not a cruel man. I've never hated anyone. But I hate her with all my soul for all the wrong she has done me.
Steva knocks back a short drink.
Now, it is your turn to play us something, Countess.
I thought you'd never ask.
Kitty and Levin sit together at a small table.
Since we last met, there is something I have often wanted to ask you.
What is that?
The children's alphabet blocks are scattered between them. Levin takes four blocks and arranges them in a line to read D-N-M-N.
This.
Kitty smiles and adds an O to the D to make do.
Do? Not?
Levin slides the O down parallel to the N, replacing it with an I.
Did.
She completes the words.
Did not.
Levin slides the T to one side and positions a new block next to the final N with the letter E on it.
The last word is never.
She trembles and meets his gaze. He nods nervously. Kitty slides a handful of blocks into position so as to spell, "Did no mean never?" Levin sweeps the blocks aside with the palm of his hand. Kitty looks at them, then gathers more blocks into a line to create another string of letters. She pushes them towards him and trembles slightly as she gives him an uncertain, teary-eyed look. He frowns and looks down at the letters which spell T-I-D-N-K. With the addition of three blocks, he completes the final word, K-N-O-W, no. She smiles sadly and he completes the two preceding words, do not. She swiftly removes the O from do, and Levin squints down at the table.
I know what it says.
Dolly glances discreetly at them as she drifts across the room. They each move a block so as to complete the first of the four words. As they once again reach for more letters, their fingers brush intimately, and between them, they arrange the blocks into the sentence, "Then I did not know." She removes her hand and looks down uneasily.
Then.
Her eyes glisten.
But now.
He's on a knife edge. Quickly, she assembles more letters. C-Y-F-A-F.
Can you forgive? Forget.
Her nostrils flare as she holds back tears. A tight smile flickers on his lips and he lifts his hand from the table to reveal three smaller blocks. I-L-Y. Tears of happiness well up in Kitty's eyes.
I never stopped.
She sobs quietly and the tears roll down her soft, youthful cheeks. Levin cracks a smile. The tender moment is broken as Prince Sherbatsky blows his nose. He examines the contents of his hanky. Setting a hat on his head, Alexei strolls out into the night air. A backdrop on stage provides the requisite scenery. St. Basil's Cathedral in black and white. Gaudy onion domes are dotted about the elaborate confection like iced gems on a child's birthday cake. Alexei descends steps from the stage. Eyes downcast, he unfolds and reads a letter drafted in sloping, feminine handwriting. "I beg you to come. I need your forgiveness. I am dying. Anna." He tears it into small pieces and tosses it to the wind. The scraps fall down around him like confetti, and are quickly lost in a blizzard of paper snowflakes as he stands alone in the empty auditorium, lit by a cold blue spotlight. Anna lies on her back, looking up, her head on a pillow. Anushka and a doctor are at her bedside.
Why doesn't he come? He is kind. He will forgive me.
Alexei appears at the foot of her bed.
Her fever is higher.
I want Alexei. Why doesn't he come? Give me some water. No, I mustn't. It isn't good for my little girl. Well, let her have a nurse, yes. Don't bring her here, because Alexei is coming and it will hurt him to see her.
He's come, my dear. Look there.
Her deliverance is still in God's hands.
You think he won't forgive me, but you don't know him. No one knows him except me. I'm not afraid of him now.
Count Vronsky's there, too.
I'm afraid of death, though.
Alexei sits down at her side.
Oh.
Shh. Shh.
Vronsky hangs his head.
You poor man.
Anna is deathly pale. She sheds a tear.
Let him come closer.
Alexei turns his head.
Alexei?
He shifts resentfully in his seat.
Alexei?
Alexei glares at the Count, who stands biting the fingernails of one hand, his other arm held tightly across his abdomen in a comforting self-embrace. Reluctantly, he He flops forward onto the bed and buries his head in his hands.
Look at my husband. He's a saint. Take his hand.
Solemnly, Alexei does as he's told. Count Vronsky looks up at him timidly, and Alexei's face registers compassion. Anna smiles wistfully.
Thank God. Thank God.
Alexei turns his eyes upwards, then closes them with a sigh. Later, he and Vronsky sit apart on either side of the writing desk, their backs to the wall, as they stare pensively towards the bed. Alexei rises and goes to Vronsky, engaging him in earnest.
You must leave now. I promise to send for you if she asks for you. I don't know what happened to me. I forgive you. I forgive Anna.
Vronsky meets his gaze.
My soul is filled with joy. I will remain with her and look after her forever.
Closing his eyes, Vronsky weeps. Alexei rests a gentle hand on his shoulder.
Come now.
The Count slumps forward and sobs on Alexei's chest.
Come now.
Later.
Look at you. You look like what you've become, a laughingstock.
The Countess.
I fancy you will be asked to leave the regiment.
I would like you to go, Mama.
I'll go when I'm ready to go. A little affair with a married woman puts a finishing touch to a young man's education, but this morbid, selfish obsession. You've publicly humiliated yourself and dishonored a man who has devoted his life to Russia. So you'd better come back to Moscow with me. You're finished here.
Sitting up in bed, Anna cuts her hair in a small mirror. The scissors twitch as they shear her spiralling black forelocks. Day. A wet nurse breastfeeds the infant as Alexei sits reading. Princess Betsy sits at Anna's bedside in a voluminous bright yellow dress.
And there was her husband, wearing her best ball gown. Rouge all over his face. Ma chère, la scandale. But I better tell you some regimental news.
In the hallway...
Who is here? Princessa Yelizaveta Fedorovna Tverskaya, Your Excellency.
I don't want to see him.
But surely your husband wouldn't stop...
Betsy sees Alexei.
I'm so glad to see you.
You look feverish.
We've been talking too much, so I'm going.
Princess Betsy came to tell me... I don't want to hide anything from you. Count Vronsky asked to come to say goodbye. He's going away.
Alexei is tight-lipped.
I've told him that I can't receive him.
Betsy looks uncomfortable.
Well, goodbye, my treasure.
She strolls calmly past Alexei towards the door. Alexei follows her from the room to see her out, and Anna buckles into the fetal position. Alexei returns and closes the doors. He cracks his knuckles.
I agree with you. As he is going away, there's no need for Count Vronsky to come.
I just said so there's no need to repeat
it. It is for you to decide.
Yes, and I decided.
Then I'm very glad that...
That we agree, so perhaps we can stop talking about it.
Of course. Is there anything I can do for
you? Yes, can you please, please, please stop cracking your knuckles?
She trembles. Alexei looks at the floor.
I'm a bad woman.
She lies on her side.
But I can't breathe. Your kindness, which I can't repay, and your forgiveness...
You begged me for my forgiveness.
But I didn't die, and now I have to live with it.
Then what? What do you want? Do you know what you want? Do you want to see Count Vronsky?
Not to say goodbye.
Unblinking, he stares at her in denial.
I can't hear.
Not to say goodbye.
He stares soberly.
You would be lost. Irretrievably lost. You would have no position. And worse, if we divorce, you would be the guilty party. That means you cannot legally remarry. Your union with Count Vronsky would be illegitimate, as would your daughter, who now has the protection of my name, and this is what you want.
She has recoiled.
It would be a sin to help you destroy yourself.
You forget something.
Count Vronsky and I love each other.
This love sanctifies a criminal folly.
All I know is that I sent him away, and it's as if I'd shot myself through the heart.
He nods blankly.
I see.
He looks away and blinks behind the oval lenses of his spectacles.
Modasirush.
Anna's mouth opens and closes.
I would die for him. I won't live like this for him.
Her face crumples.
When he knows of love, he will forgive me.
She purses her lips and Alexei clasps her dainty foot.
Then I must choose the smaller sin. Vronsky has robbed me of my cloak. I will give him my coat.
No, I...
Getting up off the bed, Alexei stands in profile for a moment. Anna looks at him, her mouth ajar, and he leaves. Framed by an archway, a carriage stops on a snowy street. Anna gets out, leaving her baby in the care of the nursemaid. Rounding two snuffling horses, she dashes to another waiting carriage, secreted beyond another sheltered walkway. The door is flung open and she leaps inside, peppering Count Vronsky with kisses.
Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling.
He cups her cheeks.
You look so pale.
Oh, my darling.
He cradles her.
We'll go south to the sea air and sunshine.
Their lips meet firmly. In bright sunlight, they lie naked in each other's arms, their limbs wreathed between white sheets. A patterned silk bedspread has been cast carelessly aside to spill onto the marble floor. Count Vronsky's strong thigh rests over Anna's sleeping form, his leg bent at the knee. The melodious sounds of a bright and cheerful day drift in through a window at the foot of the bed. Day. Kitty and Levin glide across a snow-swept landscape on a horse-drawn troika. Wrapped up warm in fur coats and hats, they share a love-struck look. Passing a windmill, they arrive at Levin's capacious wooden residence. As they climb steps towards the front door, they're heralded by a bugler. The entrance is festooned with white paper love hearts. Levin gestures to her with a smile and she steps backwards through double doors into the lounge. She beams in delight and Levin takes her hands.
Is it all right? Sit down a minute.
I want to see everything.
Agafia coughs to get his attention.
A moment.
They talk in private.
And now I'm doing kitchen maid's work, because Nadia's parents won't let her set foot in the house. And who can blame them? It's indecent.
Levin leans on a wooden beam and looks at Kitty, who's crouching beneath drooping Christmas decorations to pet a lively black dog. Levin cuts a hunched and solemn figure as he steps into an attic bedroom where dusky, sweet-natured Masha kneels by Nikolai's bed. His eyes are closed as she hums a melody to him. Levin clears his throat and she takes note of his presence. Rising deferentially, she curtsies and shuffles aside with her eyes lowered. Levin sits down on his brother's bed.
It's Konstantin.
Yes, good. A doctor here is useless. Get me one from Moscow.
Where did you go? I asked for you everywhere when I was getting married.
Eyes closed, Nikolai shakes his head and becomes still. Levin looks at Masha and stands up.
I'm sorry. I couldn't leave him.
Yes. My wife. You can't stay now.
Levin walks away. He sits with Kitty in the dining room.
I will nurse him with Agafia. The woman will find somewhere in the village. You won't see her. She knows it is impossible to meet you. It is a torment to me that I've brought you under the same roof as this unfortunate, as this fallen, and in your precious, in your delicate condition.
What cost you?
She gets up dismissively. On the landing.
Good. A clean night's check of sheets. A towel and a clean pail of warm water.
She hands Levin her furs.
Wait.
He hands them to Agafia and Kitty hands him a bedpan.
I bring the perfume bottle. In the outside pocket of my handbag.
Kitty gives Nikolai a bedbath as Masha watches. She runs a wet towel over his wan, slender arms. Levin looks in on them. Masha cradles Nikolai's head in her arms. Kitty hands her a damp towel and Masha drapes it over her lover's head. Unseen by them, Levin watches. Kitty dips her towel in the pail of water and hands it to Masha in exchange for the other one. Levin observes as the women care tenderly for his dying brother. His cheeks twitch as though he might cry. Kitty washes Nikolai's feet, then scrubs conscientiously at his shins. Masha mops his cadaverous torso with her towel. Countess Lydia makes her way along a mezzanine overlooking the Chamber of Commerce. Lydia looks down gravely on the government officials as they shake hands. Pinching the bridge of his nose, a dejected Alexei sits apart from the huddled ministers with his head bowed. The others leave and Lydia makes a brisk, unceremonious entrance, bowling across the chamber to where he's sitting.
Alexei, they're back. Here in St. Petersburg. She has written to me.
To you?
She takes the letter from a clutch purse and hands it to him. Sullenly, he takes it from its envelope and reads.
I think I don't have the right to refuse. It's the boy's birthday.
My friend. You would be blowing on the embers of a fire which must be allowed to die. Let me write to her.
He holds out the letter. Anna enters a veritable Aladdin's cave of a toy shop. She looks carefully over marionettes displayed by the entrance, and her eyes light upon a delightful white horse resembling Frou Frou in miniature. Anna arrives at Vronsky's house carrying a gift-wrapped box. She finds a letter waiting for her on a silver tray. She takes the letter from its envelope, and her expression grows steadily indignant as she reads. Scowling, she tears it to shreds. Wearing a black veil and dress, Anna bursts into the family home. A servant springs up forbiddingly on the stairs.
I'm here to see Seryozha.
She steps past him.
Madame?
She stares down a second man with a steely glint in her eye.
I beg your pardon, Your Excellency.
Anna bursts into a corridor and raises a finger to a servant.
No, I've come to see Seryozha.
She blows through the house like a gale, sweeping past all who might oppose her. Climbing the steps to his room, she finds him asleep in bed. Sitting down beside him, she leans in close and whispers softly into his ear.
Seryozha, Mama? Oh, my dear little boy.
I knew you would come. Today's my birthday.
I know.
Are you crying?
No, I won't cry.
Where did you go, Mama?
I don't know. Everywhere. The south. I thought about you every day.
And I thought about you every day.
Alexei has entered.
And you must love Papa. He's better than
I am. No one in the whole world is better than you.
Cradling Seryozha in her lap, Anna looks up sharply to see her husband. Alexei looks a little hurt, then closes his mouth and straightens his posture as he resolves to keep his dignity. Anna looks at him tearfully and his shoulders sag slightly. She gets up to leave. Taking her bag from the floor, she lowers the veil over her face and starts away from her son. The stage plays host to Seryozha and his bed, but gone are the painted galleons, gold fittings, and decorated niches in evidence before. Seryozha stares after Anna. She descends into the auditorium and paces towards Alexei, whom she passes on the way out. double doors swing shut behind her, and Alexei lingers with a resigned sadness about him. He looks at the floor. Anna's back at Vronsky's.
Where's Anya?
She's still asleep. Should I take your coat?
Anushka circles her, stroking her arm as she does so.
Are you feeling unwell, madam?
I'm not sleeping.
I can send out for something.
Yes.
Anushka goes and Anna sits down. A distant look falls over her. And there she remains as golden sunlight sweeps slowly over a mural on the far wall and perishes into night. Unmoving, Anna sits in the darkened room. Vronsky enters.
Why are you in the dark? The Ashvin's going to call. You remember him. Are you going out?
To where? To whom?
What's the matter?
I didn't know what happened to you.
But I told you yesterday, my brother.
But does it take all day to meet your brother? Does he need you more than I do?
What's happened?
He's turned on a lamp. Anna looks away.
Well, Alexander agreed to everything. Mother's house in Moscow will go to him, and the country estate will be our new home.
He smiles fleetingly.
As soon as they divorce. Karenin hasn't answered your letter yet.
Day, Anna and Vronsky have a guest, Yashvin, a uniformed army officer.
You're the very first person to call on me since our return. I received a note from Princess Betsy asking me to call on her between 6:30 and 8. Or was it 7?
But perhaps you'll meet at the opera tonight.
I would love to be there if I could get a box.
Madame, your box is number 4. You'll find me there with Princess Mikhaya. Will you come, Vronsky?
Vronsky shakes his head and Anna's face falls.
Well,
I see why Alexei is so fond of you.
Yashvin kisses Anna's hand, then bows to Vronsky and politely takes his leave. Vronsky looks imploringly at Anna.
You know you can't go to the theatre.
Anushka!
For heaven's sake!
A bath! I'll come in and choose a dress!
Anna, I implore you.
No, I'm not ashamed of who I am or what I've done. Are you ashamed for me? Why do you keep a room at the hotel? Aren't we together? Have you changed towards me?
It's because I love you and care about you.
No, if that's the case, then I don't know why you aren't coming with me.
That would make it worse.
You're afraid. Well, I'm not.
She kisses him and trots off to get ready. Smartly attired patrons of the opera stand waiting on a stairway, chatting excitedly in hushed tones as they finger their programmes. Women gasp, and a hushed silence oppresses the mood as Anna arrives, bold as brass and resplendent in a glittering white dress, snow-white ermine stole and twinkling jewellery. Anna sits next to Princess Myagkaya in the audience. Anna claps and looks around. Vronsky arrives by himself and stands to the right of the stalls. Anna catches sight of him. He claps reservedly.
Should we visit or stay put? Stay put.
The princess spots a stern-looking gentleman.
Minister, congratulations. Come in for a moment.
The minister casts a disapproving glance at Anna, then declines by way of a subtle lowering of his eyes. Anna turns her head to see a mustachioed man, flaring his nostrils and leering suggestively at her from across the aisle. Realization dawns, and she looks first disgusted, then upset. Count Vronsky kisses the hands of an eligible young woman and her glamorous mother.
Princess Sorokina and her daughter. They're from Moscow. Neighbours of Count Vronsky's mother. Quite well off. No sons. She's a widow.
Anna looks at her, horrified.
My dear, I'm a sales catalogue.
The daughter sits down behind Countess Vronsky, who leans back to address her with a smile. Vronsky strides up to his brother.
Alexei.
They shake hands and exchange kisses.
You'll come up to see us afterwards.
I'll talk to Varya.
Vronsky kneels down suavely by Alexei's wife, Varya.
Will you call on her?
Oh, Alexei. I'm fond of...
For God's sake! Anna isn't a criminal.
I'd call on her if she'd only broken the law. But she broke the rules.
Vanya brings her opera glasses to her eyes, indicating an abrupt end to their conversation. Vronsky rises indignantly. Varya pays him a sideways glance, and he strolls away towards Princess Betsy. Anna fidgets, sensing her unwanted admirer's eyes on her as he eavesdrops.
Who has made the decor?
Haven't we got a program? Colonel, would you be so kind?
Of course.
Please. I would be honored if you would take mine.
Thank you, Eric.
Anna stops on seeing the man's wife glare.
It's a disgrace.
Hush, dear. A common courtesy.
Vronsky joins Betsy, who absently offers her hand to be kissed.
Everyone's looking.
Let them look. Fetch my cloak. What are we coming to? It's an insult to decency. Take me home.
Hush. I beg you, my dear. It was only a word or two.
I have a word or two for some people one didn't expect to be rubbing shoulders with. She has a nerve flaunting herself like a slut in society.
All eyes are on Anna. Vronsky springs to his feet.
Yes, why don't you rescue her and put your seal on the fiasco?
Princess Myagkaya clasps Anna's hand. The seated patrons freeze like statues as they look at Anna, made conspicuous in her finery by a bright spotlight.
Alexei, you see why she must divorce. Marriage will solve everything. When will it be?
As far as I'm concerned, she's my wife.
As you saw, she isn't.
He swallows.
We're going to Moscow, then to my place in the country.
That sounds like a good idea.
But for a day or two, Anna will be at home. Then I'll say goodbye now.
A tear trickles down Anna's cheek as she gazes at Vronsky from the other side of the theatre. Dejected, Anna returns to Vronsky's house. She removes her luxurious white stole and sets it down on the side as Vronsky enters from outside and removes his top hat. They share a pregnant look.
Well, you had an excellent night. Does your mother want you to marry the widow or the child?
Either one.
Well, don't joke about it. If you loved me, you would have locked me in to stop me going!
She flounces off to the bedroom where she stands vacantly before the mural of muscular men, hammers raised in toil. She crumples to the floor and her white skirt billows up around her as she covers her eyes and sobs. Vronsky enters and drops to his haunches to comfort her.
Yes, it was my fault.
Anna shakes her head. Vronsky kisses her shoulders and she folds back into his embrace, gripping his arm tightly. He caresses her.
I won't sleep.
He nuzzles the nape of her neck.
I know how to make you sleep.
Anna lies in bed, staring at a bottle of morphine on the bedside table. She seems to rock as if bobbing on water. Light, refracting through the glass bottle, blurs to become the wheel of a train, kept in relentless, grinding motion by powerful metal crankshafts. Men and women, dressed almost exclusively in white, sit talking in a quiet tea shop. Anna sits alone in a corner. Stirring tea in a china cup, she spots two ladies staring at her from the entrance. They discuss her disapprovingly. A seated woman gives her a reproachful look. Anna begins to cry and dabs her eyes with a napkin. She dumps some change on the table, then, as if from nowhere, Dolly sits down and smiles nervously at her.
Anna, I am very glad to see you. Are you well? How is your little one? Steva wanted to invite you and Count Vronsky to the house, but it's impossible.
Oh, I understand.
No? No, you don't. Kitty and her husband are with us. She's in Moscow to have the baby.
Kitty? Oh, tell her how pleased I am.
Perhaps I'll wait a year or two. Love.
Yes, love.
Dolly looks at Anna with kind, generous eyes.
Don't you disapprove of me for what I've done?
No. I wish I'd done the same, but no one asked me. Well, I wouldn't have been brave enough. Steva, you know, he doesn't change. Like all men, I suppose.
Dolly forces a smile. Anna tries not to cry, and does her best to offer a consoling smile in return. Night. Anna stands staring out of a hotel room window. She's dressed in a red robe and her hair is down about her shoulders. She smokes. The tip of the cigarette lights up as she draws on it. Inhaling, she tosses the cigarette out of the window. Sobbing breathlessly, she pours herself a drink from a cut glass decanter and looks over at Count Vronsky asleep on the bed. She adds morphine. Having drained the glass, she sets it back down again. Day. Count Vronsky returns to the hotel and hangs his hat up by the door. Anna springs out cheerfully from their room.
I had an inspiration. Why do we have to wait here? Why can't we wait in the country? I don't want to hear any more about a divorce or think about it.
Good. I'm bored here. When should we go?
Well, if I bore you here, I'll bore you in the country.
I didn't say you bore me. Moscow bores me. When should we go? Tomorrow?
Oh, I can't be ready by tomorrow.
The day after then.
If you like.
No, wait, that's Sunday. I have to see my mom.
Well, that's 20 minutes away in the train. You could go to see her tomorrow. Or was it that you wanted to spend Sunday with Princess Sorokina?
Please, don't spoil everything. I can't see my mom tomorrow because she won't have read the papers she has to sign.
In that case, let's not bother. I'll leave on Sunday or not at all.
Well, that's absurd.
It's absurd to you because you have no understanding of my life here.
Anna.
No, you've stopped loving me. You've given up everything for me and it's turned you against me. I lie about
Stop.
It.
I put a far departure for a day or two and you tell me I don't love you.
Because I've been living off your love and there's none left. So this is over. Finished.
Racing back into their room, Anna pours herself a drink and quaffs it. Reflected in a slender mirror, she looks back at him.
I'm sorry.
She lingers for a moment, then starts slowly towards him across the electric blue bedroom.
I don't mind when we go.
I'll telegraph my mom. We'll go on Sunday. I'll do anything you want.
You should leave me.
I don't want to. I love you.
Why?
Can't ask why. About love.
Count Vronsky strokes her cheek as they kiss. Reflected in a mirror, Anna lies asleep on the floor. She wears a corset and hooped underskirt. Her eyes blink open and she brings a hand to her forehead. In the next room, Vronsky hides a telegram as she enters.
So, will you be all packed? I'll be out today making the arrangements.
Is that your way of telling me you'll be at your mother's with that simpering little princess?
No, I'll be at my lawyer's waiting for some documents. Then I'm having dinner to say goodbye to old comrade.
Well, I know what that means.
My God, this is unendurable. I can invite them here, if you like.
Thank you, but if I'm not fit to dine in society, I won't eat with the band. Who was the telegram from?
I didn't show you, because Steven keeps telegraphing what we already know. Karenin promises nothing, but will consider...
I told you I don't care about the divorce, so why hide the telegram?
Having snatched it from him, she glares. Vronsky turns and walks away. He steps back into the room, holding his hat.
Is there anything you wish to say to me?
Her back to the wall and her eyes averted, Anna trembles. Vronsky folds his jacket over one arm and leaves. Rushing to the window, Anna looks down at a carriage outside, wherein sits the widowed princess's daughter. Vronsky rounds the carriage and kisses her hand. The blonde princess looks up at Anna and giggles. Anna blanches and sits down. She looks across the room and Vronsky appears to her in a mirror. He removes his hat.
So it's the child.
She brought papers from my mom.
Anna stares at him. He looks back apologetically.
Anna.
She narrows her eyes. Count Vronsky turns away again and leaves. She runs to the doors as they close and holds her hands out in front of the frosted glass windows. Hearing a sound, she turns. She starts slowly across the room. A new Annushka drifts by as Anna unfastens the hooped red underskirt and lets it fall to the floor. Annushka tightens Anna's corset and helps her back into the underskirt. She stares defiantly at her reflection. Annushka turns her round, hooking her into a shimmering crimson dress. Anna walks through the hotel suite wearing the dress and a matching hat and veil. She buckles in pain and clutches her stomach, then retreats into a darkened corner, where she sits down and wrenches back a curtain. The world beyond the window is moving by. She's on a train. Rising from her seat, she crosses the black carriage and takes a seat facing the woman who sneered at her in the tea shop. The po-faced woman peers at her over a hardback book. Anna stares out of the window. A blurry reflection in the glass makes manifest her worst nightmare, as Vronsky and Princess Sarakina make love. The noise brings Anna to from her dark thoughts, and the reflection vanishes. The other passengers stand stock still. Anna gets up and walks around them. She looks at them contemptuously and steps off the train. Anna makes her way through the crowd, who are frozen in a peculiar tableau amidst dangling ropes on gantries up in the theatre's fly tower. Her ravaged eyes rove as she picks her way through the people on the platform. A young blonde boy stares at Anna as she sits alone on a bench at the station. Misty-eyed behind the veil, she stares sadly into space, a flash of the train's mighty wheels in motion. Anna swallows. The wheels keep chugging in the darkness. Her eyelids flicker as she wells up. A sudden realization banishes the wretched look from her face, and for a moment she almost smiles. She rises hastily and with a somber look steps forward to the edge of the platform. The train envelops her in steam as it rattles into the station. Illuminated by the strobing light of passing carriages, Anna steels herself and throws herself under.
Forgive me!
She's crushed beneath a wheel. In the hotel, Vronsky spins round as if having heard. Anna lies on her back across the train tracks. Flickering light plays on her lifeless face, which is dashed from head to cheek with blood. Day. Levin and his farm workers mow a golden field in glorious sunshine. Levin works beside Theodore.
I'll be buying in feed before winter's over.
But you don't press people hard. But you live rightly. For your soul. Not your belly.
How do we know what's rightly?
Just by knowing it. How else?
But I believe in reason.
Reason? Was it reason that made you choose your wife?
The sun flares behind Levin as he stands up straight. He turns from his work and starts walking. Raindrops begin to fall and the heavens open. Levin returns to the house to find Kitty bathing their baby.
I came looking for you.
He looks pleased.
I understood something.
Did you understand?
She wraps the infant in a towel and hands him to Levin, who cradles him lovingly in his arms. Kitty slides her wedding ring back on.
He smiled at me.
He's very advanced for his age.
She beams and takes a seat.
What did you understand?
She looks at Levin expectantly. Levin smiles and shakes his head, then looks down at his son. The baby wraps his tiny hand around Levin's thumb. The Oblonsky house at night. A maid leads Lily away by the hand. Prince Shcherbatsky sits at the table with young Grisha. A disconsolate Steva stands alone outside, smoking a cigar. Day. A little girl walks through a flowering meadow. Wearing a white suit and straw hat, Alexei sits on a chair in the long grass, reading. He looks up from his book as Seryozha calls out through cupped hands.
Anya! Anya! Anya!
The girl ambles up nearby and Seryozha picks her up in his arms. It's his little sister. Alexei smiles to himself and goes back to his book. The verdant meadow with its swaying grasses and clusters of white flowers extends from the rear of the theatre to the back of the stage and beyond, spilling out through a gap in the wall to the world outside. The image fades to black. Directed by Joe Wright. Produced by Tim Bevan, Eric Fellner, Paul Webster. Screenplay by Tom Stoppard. Based on the novel by Leo Tolstoy. Executive Producer, Lisa Chasin. Co-Producer, Alexandra Ferguson. Keira Knightley. Jude Law. Aaron Taylor-Johnson. Kelly MacDonald. Matthew McFadyen. Donald Gleason. Ruth Wilson. Alicia Vikander, with Olivia Williams and Emily Watson, Tanishtha Chatterjee, Michelle Dockery, Steve Evetts, Holiday Granger, Shirley Henderson, Suzanne Lother, Raphael Personas, Alexandra Roach, Pip Torrens, David Wilmot. Director of Photography, Seamus McGarvey, ASC, BSc. Production Designer, Sarah Greenwood. Editor, Milani Ann Oliver. Costume Designer, Jacqueline Duran. Hair and Makeup Designer, Ivana Primorac. Music by Dario Marianelli. Choreographer, Sidilabi Chekawi. Casting by Gina Jay, Dixie Chasse. A Joe Wright film. Anna Karenina. Oblonsky, Matthew McFadyen. Matvey, Eric McLennan. Dolly, Kelly MacDonald. Grisha Oblonsky, Theo Morrissey. Lily Oblonsky, Cecily Morrissey. Masha Oblonsky, Freya Galpin. Tanya Oblonsky, Octavia Morrissey. Vasya Oblonsky, Beatrice Morrissey. Mademoiselle Roland, Marine Battier. Anna Karenina, Keira Knightley. Anushka Gurumegalu-Sia. Arwan Galieva. Karenin, Jude Law. Corny, Carl Groves. Michal Sludin, Brian Hans. Seryozha, Oscar McNamara. Vali Lukic, Luke Newbury. Countess Vronsky, Olivia Williams. Doorkeeper, Michael Schaefer. Levin, Donald Gleason. Elderly Waiter, Stephen Beard. Kitty, Alicia Vikander. Prince Shcherbatsky, Pip Torrens. Princess Shcherbatsky, Suzanne Lother. Countess Nordston, Alexander Roach. Borisov, Henry Lloyd Hughes. Vronsky, Aaron Taylor-Johnson. Nikolai, David Wilmot. Masha, Tanishtha Chatterjee. Guards Officer, Joseph McNabb. Station Master, Nick Holder. Austrian Princess, Claire Greenway. Wheel Tapper, Mike Shepherd. Oblonsky's servant, Arthur Nightingale. Agafia, Buffy Davis. Kitchen maid, Gala Davis. Kitchen maid, Gala Wesson. Boris, Eros Vlahos. Kosunski, Kyle Soller. Kapitonich, Sam Cox. Petritsky, Max Bennett. Baroness, Holiday Granger. Princess Betsy Tverskoy, Ruth Wilson. Tuskovich, Jude Monk McGowan. Colonel Demin, Anthony Byrne. Countess Lydia Ivanovna, Emily Watson. Princess Myagkaya, Michelle Dockery. Princess Merkalova, Emerald Fennel. Anna's friend, Sarine Sofair. Yashvin, Thomas Howes. Alexander Vronsky, Raphael Personas. Makotin, Bill Skarsgård. Princess Socarina, Cara Delvigne. Princess Socarina Sr., Bodil Blaine. Varya, Hira Hilmar. Prince Tverskoy, Kenneth Collard. Theodore, Steve Evets. Young peasant, Connor McCarry. Stremov, Giles King. Anna's doctor, Martin Wimbush. Princess Betsy's footman, James Northcote. Shopkeeper, Duncan Wisby. Opera house wife, Shirley Henderson. Opera house manager, Simon Muller. Piano prodigy, Nikolai Lester. Baby Anya, Tillibet Grant. Music orchestrated by Dario Marianelli and Benjamin Walfish. Music conducted by Benjamin Walfish. Music supervisor, Maggie Rodford. Assistant music supervisor, Chantel Woodnut. Score recorded and mixed by Nick Woolidge. Assistant engineers, Fiona Cruikshank, Lawrence Anslow. Score recorded and mixed at Air Lyndhurst Recording Studios. Solo piano, Dario Marianelli. Violin solo, Jack Liebeck. Viola solo, Robert P.D. Smithson. Solo cello, Caroline Dale. Accordion, Eddie Hessian. Clarinet, Matthew Hunt. Opera singers, Telman Gushevsky, Allegra Giagu. Singing Russian soldiers, Philip Fiersov, Chris Foster, Yaroslav Gavrilov, Lukasz Hajdushenya. Song to a New Life, Anushka Shankar. Performed by Tanishtha Chatterjee. With special thanks to Anushka and Zubia, I love you. Lindy, Sukanya, Sarah, Mike, Nora and Baba, I love you too. Philippe Rousselot. The Forestry Commission, the National Trust, Ham House, London, Didcot Railway Centre, the military and staff at Salisbury Plain Training Area. Emma Hope, Wartsky Antiques, Theodore Alexander, the Very Reverend Stephen Platt, Eastman for the management of Sidi Larbi Cherkawi. Filmed on location in England and Russia and at Shepperton Studios, England, this motion picture used sustainability strategies to reduce its carbon emissions and environmental impact. For more information, visit www.focusfeatures.com/gogreen. A logo, green is universal. Green lives here. Copyright 2012 Focus Features LLC, all rights reserved. Focus Features LLC is the author of this motion picture for purpose of the Berne Convention and all national laws giving effect thereto. The characters and incidents portrayed and the names herein are fictitious, and any similarity to the name, character or history of any actual persons living or dead is entirely coincidental and unintentional. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries, and its unauthorized duplication, distribution or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Working title: Focus Features. ITFC audio description was written by Sam Clark and read by Helen Vasey.